Nerd Soul.
Woo! Ha ha! Late yeah. LK at one youngster holding it down, bringing that street geek and nerd soul. What is up, my people, today, all year? Coming with another wonderful episode of Dope Folks. Writers, creators, artists, directors, all that jazz. You can find it right here. Hang out with them. Figure out some things that you ain't even know about yourself by getting to know them. I am joined here by Nerd Soul Light. Say what's up.
Hey.
Oh boy. And joined in this square right here, a young gentleman that has been hot on the indie circuit for a while. I met through the group chat for the Don't Rush Challenge for indie comics.
Yes, sir.
And is here to talk about some new projects as well. TJ Sterling, what's up?
Yo, what's going on, everybody? It's your boy, TJ Sterling, president and lead artist of Ray Comics. Happy, excited to be back on Nerd Soul. Dope Folks. It's a great platform. Mr. Michael Young does his thing, a.k.a. the Young and Restless,
oh,
a.k.a.
man.
The King of the Cali Castle, you know what I'm saying? Happy to be here.
Wow. Okay. You know what? I'll take that. I'll say, you know what I'm saying? Okay. With a little bit about, you know, Ray Comics, tell people what you actually do.
Absolutely. So I've been in the comic industry for a while, guys. I mean, I've been frequenting cons since 2005. I did about 10 years of just being a fan where I was going to the cons every single year, networking with folks, collecting, supporting indie books, and also just learning the business. And then had the great opportunity to work with Marvel for about a year while I was in college, getting my degree in art. And I studied basically production art, graphic design, all within the bullpen at Marvel, which kind of gave me the base of my knowledge. And then from there, I took all of that and did some other freelance work for other companies, started my own company, Ray Comics. And now I also own the company, but I'm the lead writer and artist for the series Okemist. And we have a couple of other books coming out too.
All right, word up, word up. When it comes to, you know, kind of like being the lead, but also like running it, how do you juggle those types of duties? Is it something that's easy for you? You know, because we got into it a little bit sort of with the rent party and stuff, but how do you, you know, how do you know when it's time to jump from like one to the other?
It's tough, man, honestly, because I feel like when you own something, you want to make sure that every single product you put out is top tier, has the polish on it. And you know, you have to almost remind yourself, okay, there's certain things you can't do. So even though I'm trained in like lettering and production and a few other things like logo design, I'm like, I need to actually hire people who do that for a living, who really that's their crap. Like Deron Bennett of Animal World Design, one of the best letterers in the game. Shout out to Deron, who's also the letterer on all of the Okemist series. You know, there's certain art forms that you just, you know, can't do yourself. So it's like, make your life easier, hire great people, collaborate with great people, and just try to, you know, enjoy the process. Because I feel like when you do try to do everything, it just takes away some of the enjoyment of it all.
Yeah, word up, I feel you. Now, speaking of enjoyment of it all, you know, you got something that you're dropping. Actually, you dropped today. You have a brand new Kickstarter for your series that you just spoke a little bit about, Okemist. If you could, let the people know, like, what is Okemist?
Yes, sir. So Okemist is a sci-fi, Sentai-inspired genre of a comic book series called, let me rewind the tape on that. I messed up a little bit. I've been doing pitches all morning in my head, so they just come out a little not so smooth. But Okemist, sci-fi martial art action story about a young black kid named Kale. He has a latent superhuman ability that could potentially save the human race. And there's four biomechanical warriors that have actually traveled from like a dark future to acquire that ability. And they're looking to find this to possibly fix their broken world. But these guys aren't the heroes. They're actually the villains of the story. So it's a little bit of a twist and turns and some unexpected things that go on.
All right, cool, cool. Now, speaking of Okemist, you're coming into this. What number issue is this for you?
This is the fourth book in the series, but it's technically, well, we had issue zero that came out in 2015. It's like a prequel, 36-page prequel, where you see the main character, Well, he's actually a lot older. He's kind of like a fully fledged hero. He's already been doing it for X amount of years. And then with the issue one, we kind of rewind the tape to where he's a young kid, where he's getting ready to start his journey into adulthood. So before he has any powers at all. So we kind of throw the audience for a little bit of a loop, make them think like, okay, what is this non-linear storytelling we have going on? It's definitely much different. And I always get people that come to me at cons like, yo, what does this mean? Like, is this like a different arc? Is this a different timeline? There's all kinds of theories that they come up with. And that's what I guess I just love so much is the thoughts that are provoked. So 0, 1, 2, and 3 are already out on my website and been at cons, and then number 4 drops at the Kickstarter.
All right, and guys, you can see all those links just below. Be easy to find, you know, right there. Speaking of alchemists and time travel.
Yes, sir.
Do you find it hard to write for time travel? Do you find it hard to plan out stories? Because I know you're dropping issue 4 now, but I assume that you've kind of outline probably the next 4 to 5, if not more, issues. Do you find it hard dealing with time, playing with time, or are you more of the side where it's like, time can be whatever you want it to be, just have fun reading?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like comics is the big budget movie that everyone wants to tell. So you can do it really any way you want. I personally think that time travel is fluid, but at the same time, it's not like there's certain boundaries that can't be broken, at least how I tell my time travel stories. So it's like, we can't, you know, throw a pebble in the river and then, you know, we have a completely new universe that sprouts off from it. But with Alchemist, I'm definitely writing, you know, arcs and arcs further, you know, down the line. So I'm looking at everything from plot points. Planning for time travel is definitely something that you have to look at, like how could it affect other books, other stories. So like there's lots of planning involved, in my opinion, and that's really where those threads come in.
Cool. Now, backing up, when it comes to just the idea of Alchemist, is this something that you've always wanted to do, something that was more spur of the moment? How did that come to light?
Yeah, man, I appreciate that question because, you know, I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is a relatively small town, kind of considered part of the Bible Belt, so super religious. It's crazy things because it just got rated as one of the number one cities that's, I guess, bad for middle-aged Black folks to grow up in or to try to build a business or a family in. Because the majority of the business and the economy is kind of passed in between the Dutch and the people who are living in that area. So it's kind of an interesting space when I grew up there, because there's all these people like us who love comics, anime, and all these things. But then you go into a comic book store and you weren't necessarily welcomed. And then when you look on the shelves, there was necessarily nothing that really looked like us that we could relate to. So even at a young age, probably your son's age, that's when like my mother was the first person who took me to comic book store. She was like, yo, this is going to help him read. This is going to help him get into higher, you know, books and whatever. And I think I knew at that age, like, yo, there's nobody that looks like me on these shelves and I want to do something about it. And that's where the initial idea started for Alchemist.
Word. So going into the industry, kind of like around comics, when you're creating, I know, you know, times have changed. You know, we're in the Corona timeline. Things are different.
Divergent future.
Yeah. I've been calling it the Corona timeline for a minute. So with the Corona timeline, do you find more or less opportunity now? When you're like creating, when you're writing, when you're releasing books?
You know, I would say that we've had the highest influx of online sales we've ever had. And I think that's definitely due to the fact that people want new material, but they're at home, they want digital. I'm getting more sales from abroad, out of the country, from some weird places through Instagram ads and Facebook ads and things like that. So to me, people are forced to buy online more than ever. And there's still that group of people that want the cons, though. So, like, they're going to wait. Some people are going to wait. But I also feel like for Kickstarter like that we're launching, that we've launched, this is the opportunity for people to really, this is like our con, you know, this is like our creator con that we're going to do. And I think I'm going to get back to you completely on that question once we see how the numbers are from the Kickstarter. If that shit's astronomical, then I'm going to be like, whoa, wait a minute, Corona, thank you. Kind of, maybe.
A little bit. Well, yeah, man. And guys, go on and check out the link in Kickstarter. Go and put a little something in the bucket. You know what I'm saying? Get yourself a book and, you know, enjoy. Enjoy, if you will. And pick up some books, of course, 0 through 3, which, you know what? I'll do a review of the first 3, or technically first 4, and we'll do something on that a little later. You spoke about something that I think a lot of creators are either doing or thinking about doing, or maybe even scared of doing, which is like running ads, you know, for your content. From a business perspective, how frustrating, how rewarding, how hard has it been to run ads for a property like yours?
It's definitely been interesting, because when I first started running ads on my own, I really didn't know what I was doing. So like my tags weren't proper, you know what I'm saying? Like the imagery probably would have been better if I picked certain pictures over the other. Like, but I've been working and collaborating with a couple of different people who are in the marketing space, and they know what the right tags are. They know when to post and what not to post and how to look at the demographic and stuff like that. So now, one of the smartest things I ever did was hire somebody who knew more about the marketing than I did, so I could focus on being the artist and create the content. And now I'm starting to see those numbers and that like reciprocation of like, oh man, like, you know, 800 likes on a pic. I've never got 800 likes on anything. Now it seems small, because some people,
that's a lot, man. 800 is a lot, especially if you're converting, you know, even say 5% of them. It's not bad, man. It's not bad at all. Or even getting some shares out of that stuff. It's not bad at all.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of that, man. And I'm trying to live more on Twitter. And I'm already on Facebook a lot, but now it's like up on the level on Twitter and then Instagram and things like that. Because, you know, we've definitely been around for a while. And, you know, we have like word of mouth, which has been pretty powerful over the years. I think we've been able to sustain ourselves pretty lucratively over 5 years just from word of mouth and going to cons throughout the country and selling to people. And you would go to a con like back in the day, Jim Lee or the Image Cats, and like you'd sit at a table and then literally you'd build your fan base from these events. And I think now, because we're in this Corona timeline, you know what I'm saying? You got to build your fan base online even more. Like, you've got to push the online game.
Definitely. So on the relaxed side, you have Okemos. What kind of, describe the world as it is when it comes to like when the reader comes in, say on issue 1, what is kind of the world like? Is it like ours? Is it not, you know, is it unlike anything you've ever seen? What can we expect from Kale? That kind of thing.
Absolutely. So let me answer that question by saying issue 0 first. So when people grab issue 0 first, the prequel, you're actually in this dark, desolate future where everything's kind of destroyed. You know what I'm saying? People are walking around with respirators. It's not safe to breathe the air outside. And there's actually these biomechanical, like monstrous creatures that are running the globe and kind of taking over everything. And then you've got one lone warrior, which is, you know, Kale as an adult hero, a fully adult hero, maybe in his early 40s, that's kind of almost at the end of his run fighting these creatures in this timeline. So it's kind of like what could happen if, you know, everything crazy went wrong in a sci-fi movie. And then you pick up issue 1, and then boom, it's modern day time. It's like, I think when I first wrote the book, it was 2015 in issue one. No, 2016 in issue 1. And the climate was regular everyday time, you know. And again, this young kid, Kale, you know, who's 18 at the time in issue 1, is getting ready to go to school and major in genetics. And, you know, he is, you know, still kind of haunted by the fact that he doesn't know who his family is. He doesn't know where he fits in within, like, the world, because he doesn't know who his parents are. It's not like you could be an orphan and know even a little bit about where you come from. He absolutely knows nothing. But I think a lot of us, especially if you're, you know, a Black American, you know, you're almost an orphan in some way, because you don't know, not every one of us knows what part of the motherland we came from. So there's a part of us that's orphaned that we're kind of always curious about, and that's a very apparent thing for him. So the timeline's current, but the situation, the story in terms of how he feels is very much an everyday thing. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, these warriors kind of appear from that same future that we saw in issue zero, looking for something, and something that apparently Kale has.
Word up. Now, if you were to speculate, unless you know, what kind of music does Kale listen to? You know what I'm saying? What sports team does he follow? You know, like, you know, is he interested in someone, you know what I'm saying, at the school? You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I like these finer details, because Kale is one of those kids that he loves to eat, you know what I'm saying? He's a foodie, so like he's a little on the portly side for he's not your typical superhero that's like super fit. Like, you know, even probably Peter Parker's
as a nerd had it. Brothers.
Let's go. We were all there, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, you got cats like Peter Parker who had a six pack even when he was a nerd. Like, he was skinny, frail, but like he was still chiseled. Like, bro.
He was like a nerd, but he had his P90X too. So,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So Kale's not like that. He's a very much an everyday kid that, again, loves food. He loves science. That's his thing. The book actually takes place in the Midwest, West Lafayette, Indiana, where Purdue University is the school he goes to. And that's like the number one school for genetics in the country right now and still to this day. So that's the reason why we chose that. But I'm from Michigan. I actually made the character from Michigan, from Flint. So, you know, he's a a Chicago Bulls fan, and he listens to 90s hip hop and R&B.
What up? This is up. He's a Bulls fan, man. It's been rough. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, lately it's been terrible.
The glory is gone.
True that.
But, I mean, they had their time. They had their time. The Bulls did. So, when it comes to, on the Kickstarter side, from like a creative side, has Kickstarter been sort of like everything that you've expected it to be? Has it been everything that you've sort of wanted it to be, as far as like, oh, cool, this is a way I can connect. I can, you know, build an audience, also get that money, you know, and also help fund the project? Or has it been a lot tougher than, you know, maybe some might say? You know, some might say just make a Kickstarter. And, you know, like, I feel like it's not that easy.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I have no point of reference in terms of how Kickstarters look once they've actually, like, fully launched and funded and completed. Like, this is my very first time ever crowdfunding a book. It's going to be a very interesting experience to see what happens, like how it all works. I mean, I know that when I first heard of doing a Kickstarter, I'm like, okay, cool. Cause typically we go to a con and we'll kickstart our next book there. People will know that we're dropping it. I'll have like preview, you know, pages and stuff. So people will invest right there at the show. And that's kind of always how I've always done it. But now it's just kind of like, okay, well, the planning, the marketing, you know, the online footprint, the incredibly high amount of detail you need to put into these pages, man. Like, I didn't even realize how much work a Kickstarter would be. I mean, I've been planning this and putting the page together alone, bringing all the assets, the additional artwork since like June the 31st of this, June 31st. So we're almost at two months, you know what I'm saying? So it's been way more challenging than I thought it would be in terms of just the initial creation of it.
Man, that's crazy. So, Alchemist, why Sentai?
Well, for me, like,
is it something that you've always been a fan of? Or
yeah, I mean, absolutely, man. I mean, I'll say it like this. So, you know, I'm a 90s head. Like, I mean, I was born in the 80s, but my time, formative years, is really the early 90s. And that's when, to me, comics and like everything dope was going on. To me, that was like the golden age of comics. It was the best times ever in terms of art, in terms of, you know, production value. I mean, production value has definitely gone up, but I will say that just the innovative nature of comics was the dopest to me, like in the 90s. Foil covers, the chromium, the one-offs, the what if was really popping, the 2099 titles.
Like, you had just a whole bunch of smaller, like, you know, publishers that were able to come through.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. I feel where you're coming from.
Absolutely. So for me, it was like, I grew up, you know, seeing these amazing comic books, and then the anime wave hit the United States like in the early 90s, like crazy. So, you know, you were seeing great shows like, you know, Ultraman 6 and Kamen Rider, then you were seeing the Guyver, then you were seeing Power Rangers, and then you had, you know, Spawn that came out as a movie and a comic book. And, you know, to me, like, you know, there's nothing more dope than a person that can, like, you know, you're a human being, but then, like, it's time to put on your suit of armor. And because, see, to me, tights are like, there's no protection. Like, tights make no sense in terms, oh, it looks cool because you can flex, but, like, you know.
I mean, except for Black Panther, it's a vibranium weave, so we allow that. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, that's the only character that got it right, in my opinion, with the, you know, with how they made that in the movie, incredible. And the vibranium weave, we'll let that slide.
But everyone else that does have just regular tights. Anyone outside of like Wonder Woman, Elongated Man, Superman, stuff like that, it's like, well, if somebody hits you, like, you ain't got no padding. Like, it's just, they're just hitting you.
Exactly. like, see, to me, as facts, because it's like, when they started doing like the Batman Arkham stuff, I thought that was dope, because like, this cat's got like legit body armor on, and it makes it seem more realistic for me. So, like I said, I always thought like having like this biomechanical, you know, armor that kind of formed over your body in like some type of a nanotech form. This is way before Iron Man. This is just me being like a science nerd, reading all these magazines as a kid, thinking, oh, it'd be really cool if like little particles made an armor. And then, you know, if we're talking about desolate future and the way we fuck up the earth and the sky and all this other stuff, then guaranteed you're not gonna be able to breathe in it, so you're gonna need a helmet. And, you know, if you're gonna be walking around Earth, you gotta have a sword, because that's what samurais do with all these dope cats. Yeah. You start putting all these thoughts into your head, and then it's like, yo, man, this is like everything that I like growing up in the 90s kind of like coalesced into one title, and that's what Oakens provides.
Word. And shouts out to the Guyver, man. Look,
oh, love that.
Yo, the live action movie though. Okay, the Guyver has a live action movie. All right, and actually, there's a newer series on Netflix that I haven't watched yet. It's been in my list like forever, but I haven't watched it yet. But the live action movie is like awesome and bad all at the same time. It's in a way that I can't describe it besides saying, it's definitely a part of its time.
Yeah.
And you need to watch it. Like, if you like any of that, like, you know, like Power, kind of like you said, Kamen Rider, Power Rangers, any of that stuff, you should watch it. If you haven't watched it, just look for the Guyver. It's like,
don't be faded out, my G.
Very, very, it's very weird in a very good way.
I hear that, man. I was just gonna quickly say that, those 90s Guyver movies are funny, because the first one was incredibly bad, but like they stayed pretty true to the story in terms of like some of the arcs and what they did. But then Dark Hero was a little bit better. The sequel happened to be a little bit more. Yeah, Guyver Dark Hero was pretty dope, because you actually got like a better team behind it. The suits were better. The action was a little bit better. It still came out in like 94, so it was still like pretty much a product of its time period. But, you know, the guy who played the actor, David Hayter, who wrote the script for Watchmen and is the voice of, you know, Snake on Metal Gear Solid, and he's done all kinds of writing stuff for, you know, for Hollywood. He's the main actor. He plays the MacGyver in Dark Hero and does a pretty terrible job, but that kind of set up his career to be amazing as like a screenwriter and a voice actor, you know, later on. You know, it's wild.
It's like, it's pretty horrible, but I mean, it worked out.
Yeah, it did.
Straight up, man. So, with that said, I did want to switch and ask second to last question. Because I want to hold you like forever. But when it comes to the way you enjoy comics, are you more the digital side? Do you enjoy the floppies? Or do you consider, or do you, you know, do you like the trades? Or do you like the hard, you know, back, you know, like, you know, 30 issues in one thing, you know, like, how do you prefer to, you know, ingest
the omnibus style? That's a great question, man. I mean, I, you know, I have a small apartment, you know, here on the East Coast, and, you know, and I've got long boxes for days. I've got rooms filled with long boxes. So I've been trying to cut down on the floppies and the physical copy parts of comics nowadays, because again, my collection is pretty vast. So I've been buying a lot more digital, reading them on my iPad, things like that. But I still love getting trade paperbacks and, you know, just seeing the behind the scenes, some of the covers that they include in there. If they still do, I'm pretty sure they still do that. But if I'm at a con and I run across like a really dope indie book, I'll gladly support it and buy a floppy if they have it. But, you know, I try not to walk away from a table without supporting some way. And I think a lot of people, they get so stuck in the like, oh, well, I only read it if you have a trade, and then they don't support, versus like, I'll just take whatever you have and support. And I think that's the people I appreciate really the most, because it's like, you're down for the movement. You're going to give us something so we can continue to keep the shit moving. But trades, I love it all, man. As long as I can read them, I'm good.
Dope. Me, I'm definitely, if I can, I'd prefer hardcover. Is this something I like about a hardcover? Is it just something about opening that, you know? And I know they'll be like, you need to be having them digital. And I read digital as well. Because the cool thing about digital is sometimes I can just sit kind of like in front of the monitor, or I can put it up on the, you know, on like a television or something like that. And then I can also play like a soundtrack with it. So, you know, I can have fun both ways. But yeah, I'd say it's something about that hardcover, you know, like picking it up and, you know, it's, you know, the beautiful. So that's, it's one of those things, but yeah, trades definitely, and floppies if I have to, but you know, of course, space for me is a thing. So I'm starting to try to consolidate. And then of course, being married, hardcovers look nicer than just floppies all over the place. So, see, hardcovers look, you can put them up on the shelf and somebody's, oh, you have books. And it's like, yes, I do have books.
Yes, I do have books. It's a little interior decorating tip, folks. Buy hardcovers if you're married and you want a serious woman in your life.
because that's a good compromise, because like, if you just put it up there, it doesn't look like a whole bunch of like floppies just all over the place. This is like,
absolutely.
Then when you pull it out, it's like, oh, this is X-Men.
One thing I will say though, like hardcovers, man, like I really enjoy special edition hardcovers. Like I think I bought I think it was 11x17 was the size of it. And it was a Michael Turner Aspen like sketch hardcover volume. So basically you can see what his pencils look like. And he was one of my favorite artists in the late 2000s. So man.
Michael Turner.
It was like, killer.
Man.
If you're a 90s, 2000s artist, you gotta have it.
Yo, honestly, he used to flip that run he did on Superman Batman.
Oh, amazing.
Man, he killed it. That early Superman Batman series, that early 2000s or whatever, That was a sick series. It did get away from them after a while, but yeah, I'd say the first, say, like 20 issues or whatever, they had some solid stuff in there, man. And that run with Michael Turner, man. Michael Turner he was just on another level.
He was, man. I mean, I had the pleasure of meeting this dude and showing him some of my work when I was in college because, I mean, he was like one of, it was a group of guys that like I admired quite a bit. It was always Todd McFarlane when I was younger as a kid, and then Ryan Benjamin, who works for DC Comics, who's a good friend of mine now.
He can draw. That boy can draw.
He's Jim Lee's protege, and to me, like, I love the way Jim draws, but to me, Ryan is like the next, he took what Jim did and brought it to another level, kind of like what Capullo did for McFarlane. Same thing. Yep. And Michael Turner, in my opinion, did that for Mark Silvestri. Silvestri's a great artist, but Turner took it to another level and brought, you know, comics, the world of comics, something that they had never seen before in terms of Aspen. So I absolutely love his art and just looking at the pen. So pouring through them, trying to learn from that line, how do you do this line? And it was so masterful. So Aspen crew, they're still buddies of mine, and we've done some work together over the years, which has been pretty cool. So yeah, man, Superman and Batman, great run, popped off some other great stuff. And, you know, I definitely love hardcovers when they collect something special like that.
That's awesome. That's what's up. Well, last question. Since we've been hanging and you guys are already watching, you guys have already clicked open, you know, Kickstarter for Okimist in your next tab, you know what I'm saying? We all are working, we're all creating, we're all pushing. And sometimes, whether we know it or not, we're creating legacy or a legacy. Do you think about legacy? And if you do, what do you want your legacy to be?
That's a great question, man. I absolutely love when I hear it, because to me, comics is not just a way to get a Netflix special. To me, comics is life, you know what I'm saying? Storytelling is life. You know, there's a lot of folks out there, they want to just make comics specifically to get picked up on Netflix. And you know, to me, it's cool that you want to dive into the medium, and you know, the Netflix shows are great, but I mean, to me, it's like you're almost taking advantage of the medium instead of respecting it for what
you're
it is.
You're using it as a get-rich-quick storytelling scheme. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And the more and more you run into individuals like that, it's just a little bit of a shame, because, you know, there are people like us, like yourself and me, who are purists, who love this to the core of it, because we know that storytelling is at the core of everything, whether it's video games, whether it's movies, television, animated features, whatever, it all boils back down to comics and storytelling of some sort. So for me, legacy is being true to the medium, one, and then also creating something that my family, my kids that I eventually will have one day, can, you know, say, oh, hey, that's dad's entertainment company that, you know, 20 years from now, you know, will we be a multi-million-dollar, you know, enterprise that has all this stuff, and we're going to Stan Lee it, but, you know, it's going to be all black, you know what I'm saying? So legacy is really what I do this for.
Nice. Well, thank you for, you know, spending your time. Thank you for rolling through. Before we get out of here, tell the wonderful people where they can find you, and also how they can find Okimist.
Yes, sir. So again, I'm TJ Sterling, president, lead artist of Great Comics, and you can easily find me online. I'm at TJ Sterling Art on Instagram, at RAE Comics on Instagram. My website is raecomics.com, raecomics.com. And this month, from August 12th all the way to September 12th, we have an amazing Kickstarter with tons of great stuff. We've got toys, we've got t-shirts, we've got exclusive Kickstarter-only perks, brand new comics, and a whole lot more. So I hope you guys can join us.
Word up, word up. And guys, of course, NERD, SOUL, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all them places. YouTube is the main hub, so hit that thumbs up. If you hit that thumbs down, my man TJ Sterling is going to send you to a dark future, and you don't want that. You want to stay in the regular.
That's right. Well,
the present corona timeline, but look, just don't go there. Then we have podcasts, Spotify for music.
That's right.
Check a brother out. Shouts out, Barhead Brothers Unite. And
what up?
From us to you, we're saying thank you for watching and peace. Yeah.